We took the kids to middle school camp this year. I've been serving as the middle school director. I have two middle schoolers. It's interesting. I was a youth pastor. That was my first role in church ministry. So I'm back, but it's really different now. I'm a lot older. We went away to a big cabin in Arrowhead, the Long's cabin, the Long family cabin, the family of our church. And each night and each morning, we had these talks that we prepared, and I prepared way too long of talks for these kids. And we gave them each journals, kind of like we just gave you, and we gave them pens. We didn't explain anything about it. We just gave them the journal, and they all just flipped it open, and they're like very attentive. And I go into this talk that is way too long, and they're just like locked in, and they're listening, and they're nodding, and they're taking notes in their journal. I don't know what they're writing. I'm not guiding them, but I'm like, this is amazing. And the thing ends, and we have this prayer time, and it was like, yeah, this is awesome. And then the next day, in the morning, we're doing the same thing, and they're all like locked in, and somebody else is giving a talk, and I'm sitting on the couch next to a couple of the kids, and they're all taking notes, and I was like, yes. And I look over, and I was like, I wonder what so-and-so is writing on their journal. I was peeking. And so I looked over, and there's a couple words written, but there was this fantastic drawing of SpongeBob SquarePants. Like, it was detailed. And then next to SpongeBob is Squidward, also in great detail. And I start laughing to myself because I'm thinking that he's like intensely taking notes on whatever's happening, but dude is just drawing up a storm. It's so funny. The written word is it's actually a powerful reality. And the act of journaling the written word is a very powerful act, but just because you're writing things on paper doesn't mean that you've actually entered into that act. I'm taking my oldest son right now on what we're calling the man path. So it's a process from 13 to 18 of like initiation into manhood. And so we're having some time in the morning and some different experiences and things that we're trying to be intentional with. And I got him his journal and I got him a pen and he's got this Bible that he got from the kids ministry actually when he graduated the fifth grade into the middle school. It's a really cool thing that Erica does with all the kids. And we've been getting up early in the morning, so I'll shake him out of bed at like 5:30. And we'll come downstairs, and we're like, okay, we're going to have our time together. And then I'm like, open your journal. And then so we're doing something together. And I'm like, okay, well, like, you know, write that in there. And he just looks at me, and he's like, oh, like, how? Like, what do you mean? I'm like, do the journal thing. And he's like, oh, yeah. Like, this is a super nice pen. Just use that. Like, write the thing. And it hit me. Like, he doesn't know how to do it. He's never done this before. He's got the right, like, thing. He's got all that. Like, we're up early. He's got everything lined up, and we're being intentional with the space, but he just doesn't know how to do it. And I related because I actually remember when I first became a pastor, my first mentor who brought me in and hired me was like, show up day one with a legal pad and a pen. And so I showed up with, like, a yellow legal pad and a pen. He's like, that was literal. You took it really literally. I was like, well, that's what you said to do. And I did everything that he said. I remember him teaching me how like devotion time works as a pastor, and he walked me through it, and we would actually do it together. I remember him teaching me how once a month we take a day of like solitude, and he's like, you're going to come with me on the first few months. And I went with him on his solitude day, and it wasn't solitude because we were together, but he was teaching me how it worked. And then like it was this whole process, and then I had another mentor who taught me about teaching and how that works and how you would shape it. And I would sit down with him, and he would pull out his like teaching outlines, and he would be like, this is how you write it out and what it looks like for me. This is how I craft a message. This is how I think through things. This is my journal that I keep my stories in, and I will often review them and add them. And here's what, I'm flipping through all of his like his content and his stuff, and I'm going to do this next month, and I'm thinking about this for 6 months from now, and here's what it looks like when I do it like this. And it was, oh my gosh, like the wealth of knowledge and wisdom for someone to step in and teach you, that's overwhelming. That you can't know what you haven't been taught, and you can't do what you haven't learned, right? And so we're in a new month, and we're talking about presence this month. If you're just joining us as a church, we're actually on a really fun path this year. We are every year, but I mean, it's extra fun right now. Because we're doing one message a month, and then we're taking it like deeper and deeper and deeper, and we're taking it from different angles. in different layers, and we're unearthing it. And the idea isn't to like talk about things that we don't do, or the idea isn't to talk about things that we then forget and kind of move on to the next things as if we're trying to attain a great vast amount of knowledge. We're actually saying, how do we become the things that we talk about of the kingdom? Not just know a lot about them, but how do we actually become them? How do we not own all the right pens and journals and wake up at the right time, but how do we actually do the things and be shaped by the things and become the people of Jesus that are like him, that are carrying on his work in the world, that are experiencing the life of the kingdom? And so each week we're, like, the room can be set up a different way, because sometimes if we're looking at something from the left, the only way that makes sense is if we orient ourselves from the left to look at it, right? Or sometimes we'll circle up, or sometimes like different things are happening. And so this month we're talking about presence, and we're having one message, but I've chopped it up into these 15-minute sections. So last week we had about 15 minutes, and then we had an experience together. I'm going to pick up from where we left off last week. Presence, I have a slide. It's how you show up. That's how I would define it. Presence is how you show up to yourself. It's how you show up to God and the presence of God, and it's how you show up to the world, how you show up to other people. It's your level of awareness. It's your level of depth and connection, and it's your level of availability to yourself and your openness to be in relationship and connection with other people. I would argue in a lot of ways that your understanding and your availability to your own presence, it's a beginning, but it's also like the determining factor in your spiritual journey. Like, if you can't be present to yourself and to God and to other people, it's very difficult to be on a spiritual journey of being transformed. It's very difficult to be in a relationship with other people in meaningful ways. It's very difficult to have a connection to God and people around you. And so last week we talked about how there's so many things that keep us from being present, as if the world is almost like conspiring against us in a sense of distraction to keep us from being present. But Jesus says in Matthew 13, you'll be ever hearing but never understanding. You'll be ever seeing but never perceiving. For this people's heart has become callous. They hardly hear with their ears, and they've closed their eyes, which is what we don't want to be. He calls us into something else where he's teaching us to see. He's teaching us to be present. He's teaching us to recognize the kingdom of God that is actually at hand. And so if we're growing into being fully present to ourselves and God and the world around us, the reality is it's something that we actually have to learn how to do. It's something that isn't just going to come naturally, especially in our culture and our time, because of the things that exist in our world that just are plain distracting. It requires a great deal of intentionality if we're going to enter into that kind of life and space. And so last week we talked about how it starts with your breath. Very simple. It starts with just like learning to breathe, which is very critical because it allows you to slow down and then access your inner life. And then I took you into a place of examine just to be aware of what is within, what's going on in that place. We took your phones and we put them in buckets. Had you put earplugs in, and then we went into this breathing contemplative prayer exercise, and then we examined, and it was very, very peaceful, and it was very, very powerful. People described it like a blanket of peace was almost in the room. It was almost hard to come out of. Now, I would tell you that's just the beginning. That's like the starting point, breathing and opening up in order to like enter into and examine. That gives you access to yourself and what's going on and what God's doing in you. But the question I would have is, what do you do with that? Where does it go from there? Okay, so you have access to that, but it's fleeting and it's a moment. And Richard Rohr describes your mind as like a monkey mind that's just constantly like here and there and everywhere. Ideas are bouncing all over the place. And so the next step beyond just accessing what's going on in that space is actually capturing it, I would argue. It's not just accessing it, but it's actually capturing it. And you do that through the power of words, both conceived but also written. Like, word is a very, very powerful concept. We almost take it for granted, but think about Genesis 1, verse 1. Would you put that up? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters, and God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. So when it describes God creating the world in the beginning, it describes God in a complex fashion, that there's God, then there's Spirit God, and then there's the Word of God, the speaking into existence. And when God creates the world, he does it through words, which is profound. Like, words create worlds. And that's real. And he made us in his image, and he gave us the same ability and power. Look at it, John 1:1. This is like John almost writing another version of Genesis in light of Jesus. In the beginning was the Word, describing, and then God said, and it happened. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning, and through him all things were made, and without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. Jesus is that Word. Like, Jesus is called the Word of life. Word is a powerful concept, and words have the ability to actually create worlds. That's who Jesus is. That's how he brought the world into being, the animating force of the universe. God speaks things into existence. Words spoken and written are very powerful and very, very profound acts with the power to bring life and reality into existence. Because again, words create worlds. God made us with the incredible capacity and ability to access and to tap into and to wield that same power and create and shape our own world and the world around us. Do you realize that? Just with the power of words. Words are powerful. Think about how the written word can name and give access to an idea or a reality in its time and the way that it can shape the world around it. Think about when the Constitution of the United States was written and what that did and how it changed this place and this world. There are some very terrible aspects of what was written into that thing. Terrible. And they're being rectified through justice measures, largely in part by people embodying the way of Jesus and then acting on that, yes. But the power of a constitution that reshaped a lot of the world, that was just words. Or when we talk about the Reformation, and Martin Luther wrote his 99 Theses, which is what's credited when he nailed it to the door at the Wittenberg Church, that it like changed the church eventually, and it eventually changed the entire world. We talked about that a few weeks ago, or think about when like a manifesto is written, like a communist manifesto, and what that can do and how that can change the world as people take that idea and embody it, right? Or just think about like contracts generally, whether it's for a deal or whether it's for like a loan or whether it's like student loans. You sign your name to a contract that you can never get out of until it's paid back. You cannot bankrupt out of that sucker. You lock yourself into a payment that will shackle you for life unto death. That's just because you signed your name on some words unto death, right? Like, words are powerful. Or think about a political slogan that captures fear and anger of a portion of a nation, or captures hope and dreams of a portion of a nation, and what those words can actually do. You can sow like great life or great destruction with words. Or think about a book that you read in its time that changes you. I just read a series of books that I was reflecting on my study leave that radicalized me and changed me. And it's led me to the place where we're going even now as a church. Those words like shifted and tilted my whole like perception and experience. Or think about the letter that I just invited you to write. How many of you wrote that letter last month? How many of you went and read it to the person and gave it to them? I just did. Oh, just words. It's just words. It don't matter. No! Change your life. Change other people's lives, right? Words create and shape worlds, including your own. And so when we're talking about presence, we start with this power of slowing down, and we start with this power of just breathing in a contemplative prayer space. And then what do you do with that once you've gained access to all that stuff that's in you, that inner world, and everything that's going on in there in the presence of God? You have to capture it through the power of word. Romans 12 says this, would you put it up? Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, and then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. It says you'll be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Man, that happens through slowing down, breathing deep, and examining your internal world, and then actually capturing it is how you're transformed. It's how you're transformed in the renewing of your mind. Or think about 2 Corinthians 10, verse 5, and he says, "We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought." We take every thought captive to make it obedient to Christ. How do you take every thought captive in a monkey mind that you can't even track your own thoughts? Right? You write it down. It's the power of words. You capture it. I had a professor at Fuller Seminary named Marianne Mai Thompson. She's a brilliant New Testament scholar, and she was like a prolific author. And she would always say, "I don't write to tell you what I think." She says, "I write to figure out what I think." She's like, "I don't set out to write a book to be like, let me tell you what's happening." She's like, "It's the process of writing it that I actually determine what I actually think." Think about if your mind, after you access the inner parts of your own soul and what the Spirit is doing there, how you can be like here and there, even as we're breathing and contemplating and praying. And the act of sitting down and taking a pen and going, "I'm going to write it down," like it forces you to land on it. It's how you figure out what you think and what you have conviction on and what God's actually doing in you. Is God saying that? I don't. Then you write it. And boom, it's like you are creating that world as you write it on the page. There's a power in that. And the reality is I think trying to capture it digitally on a phone or a computer isn't enough. I understand we live in a digital age and everything is so easy because it's on the phone. It isn't enough. I would say it probably at best, I'll put it like this, at best, it's distracting. Because you know how many times I've come down in the morning at like 5 or 5:30 and I'm like, I'm going to have a moment right now and I'm going to spend time in the presence of God and I'm going to breathe deep and I'm going to enter in and I'm going to have this quiet time sort of meditative encounter with God's Spirit, and he's going to set me up for my day, and I'll bring my phone with me because I'm like, I'm just going to keep track of the time, you know? And then I'll open it up to see what time it is when I start, and it's like, shibloo, this news story pops up. I'm like, oh, dang, that's interesting, coronavirus. Like here? Like now? In a California emergency state? I'm just going to see what that is. And then 40 minutes is gone. I'm like, that thing on Amazon I forgot I needed to order for work, and this other thing, and I'm just going to take care of this real quick, and then, ooh, that email popped in, and oh my gosh, 40 minutes. That damn phone stole my time in the presence of God again. Again. Right? Or how many times have I missed the moment with my own family and my kids? That damn phone. And I know it at best. It's distracting, at best. At worst, it's just like vastly inferior, neurologically speaking, to writing on a piece of paper, which I know sounds counterintuitive, but neurologically speaking, it doesn't do the same thing for you in your own process of transformation and your own encounter with God and the solidification of what he's doing in a space of transformation. I told you guys I did that Made For thing, the thing where they'd mail me the boxes, and it was like a sort of process of transformation over the course of the last year. One of the main things they said you have to do is to actually journal and write with a pen, and you can't use any kind of form of technology. And it was interesting the way they said it, because they were essentially saying, like, the act of writing words on a page and the power that that has in like reshaping like a neural sort of plasticity, reshaping like the connectivity of your mind and the habits and the things that you go about, even your own process of transformation. It's critical to actually sit down and write out the words on a page for what your brain physically needs to go through in a process of transformation and change. When you talk about the renewing of your mind, and you just are short-circuiting that by typing the buttons on the thing. One of the founders, his name was Andrew Huberman, who's a brain researcher, and he says this: journaling is one of the most basic ways we can create focused reflection. Every time you journal, you increase the probability that your awareness and therefore the neural plasticity around the event or your day will be reinforced. The action is circular. It feeds back on itself and becomes self-amplifying. Some people love to write and others not so much. Keep in mind, it doesn't really matter how many lines you produce. The key is to put pen to paper and get your thoughts and feelings down. There's no right or wrong answers. Just describe your experiences from your day as vividly as possible, which raises the volume on the neural connection and conversation taking place in your brain. In other words, the written word's critical at a neural level from moving to action to reflection to transformation. It's a critical process. And so what I want to do is actually lead us into another guided meditation, another guided reflection experience together as a church, but this time pick up from where we left off and actually move into word. So we've given you guys each a journal. This is your journal for like the year as we move forward through this year of learning to see. And we want to encourage you to use it and to write in it and record what is happening in you as we're entering into God's presence each week, but also each day as a church. So take out your journal and grab your pen. And I want to teach you, this is going to sound ridiculous, but I want to teach you how to journal. Because I'm not going to make any assumptions. And maybe you're a journal master, and you scoff right now at my silly journal skills, my noviceness. Well, then today is a day to work on your pride. And you can write that in your journal in this reflective experience. You're like, and God, pride swelled in me. That my awesomeness. Also, there's buckets at the end of the rows. We're going to pass the buckets and put your phones in them again. I talked about last week how I think we, on average, we touch, pinch, swipe a phone 2,600 times a day. Power users double that. I think we average 76 sessions a day on our phone. It's a highly distracting tool. I'm going to invite you. We're going to pass it and put it under the chair at the end just like last week. If you can't do that, that's okay. I understand. Just hide it so other people don't see it. That's why the kids' numbers are on the screen. I forget where our slide deck's at. There we are. Thank you. I'm going to take you through some basic stuff real quick. And if you know these things, great. And if you don't, welcome. Some basic guidance and types of journaling. Can you put the first one up? Use your journal for like learnings and notes. I take mine with me everywhere. Did you know statistically within 1 month from now, you'll forget every single thing that I've said today in this message? 98% within the next 30 days. But if you were to write it down, the percentage drops dramatically. I think you forget like 30% of what's said, and that's just due to your poor note-taking. Learnings and notes. Like everything you learn, everything you're observing, everything that you're, like whatever books that you're reading or like conversations that you're entering into, bring it on Sunday so you can take notes with what pops out at you. People assume you can't do this. Have you been to a church where they give you a piece of paper that's got an outline and they tell you everything you're going to say and you just fill in one word and they're all, please just write the one word. I realize you're an idiot. I'm absolutely making fun of you right now by telling you this and giving you this piece of paper. In this moment, I'm shaming you. No, I assume that you're intelligent, sophisticated, theologically thinking adults who are on a journey of transformation to become like Jesus because you are in love with him, you're filled with his spirit, and you're being transformed to join him in the mission of what he's doing and transforming the world. This is what we're on about. You can take your own notes. And not just the messages, but like in life. That's one. Two. I'm going to drop that. On that, take your journal with you to your meetings. There's somewhere along the way when you think you became an expert and you don't need to like learn anything anymore and you show up to meetings and you're the one who's giving all the information. Please don't do this. You can always learn. There's always something to learn. I take mine everywhere that I go now and I write it and I add and I'm looking, I'm learning. Everything is my teacher, everybody. Two, ideation. This is where you would craft like the ideas that God puts in your head. There's constant times that there's like new things spring up. I'll capture every little like seed and tiny notion of what a new idea could be that God's doing. In me or in the world or in our church or whatever. Three is just observations and questions. I'll often like make observations of just what I see and what I'm experiencing and what's going on, and I'll just try to capture all the observations because later I try to make sense of them. And questions that arise, like if I'm inside, like if you're in this right now and this brought up some interesting questions for me, or what's going on here? Like you would write that down so you can come back and revisit it so that it isn't just a random, like, do you ever get to the place where there's so many experiences and things and the pace is moving so fast and there's so much distraction that you almost can't sort out all of your thoughts? Maybe I'm the only one, but if you're capturing that, there is a point where you can actually sort these things out and figure out what's going on in you and what God is doing in you as well, which leads me to my fourth thing that you could use your journal for. I call this the dump, sort, order, review. There's times where I do it for myself, and I'll take other people through it, where it's swirling, and you just don't, like at the beginning of my study leave, it was swirling, and I couldn't figure out up from down in my head. And so I just sat down and started writing, and I just dumped everything that was in there as much as I could, and I just chased it. I chased every thread and dumped it all, and then after I got it all out, I just sort of read through it a few times and kind of sorted what's going on in there, and what's happening, and what's beneath the surface, and I would almost ask myself the question, why did you say that? And then once you can do that, you can almost order it, and then you can write out your own observations from what was going on in you, and you can, like, review. Like, there's a whole process where you can go through this stuff, and you can use like this written word to figure out what God's doing in you, because it's not always clear, especially if you don't have experience in this kind of work in your own life and space. In the same way that when we did the breathing thing, some people were like, man, I didn't know like my lungs could hold that much. Man, you don't know how much is in that brain right now until you sort it out and you get it on paper, because I guarantee you there is so much that the Spirit's doing. It's how I listen to God and figure out what's next, is through this sort of process. And then lastly, five, what I would use it for is like a nightly examine. So my goal isn't just to tell you like, hey, you should journal, and then like just let it ride, and the next week we move on to the next thing. The goal is like, let's enter into it together so these become tools so that we actually learn how to operate in this space. And so the nightly examine would be a tool where each night you could write out, I mean, like, what if you did like the breathing exercise that I taught you last week, and for 5 minutes you do that breathing, and then you enter into a space of examine, and you ask God those questions, and then you journal it out. Like a gratitude journal. What are you thankful for from the day? What, like an experience journal. What happened? What happened today? I had some weird experiences this week, personally. So weird. And like I had a construction foreman insult me on my doorstep at my door by calling me a woman, which it was like the weirdest, and it raised some things in me. Ooh. And then I was like, and why would you use woman as an insult? There's all kinds of layers. I was mad that he called me a woman. Jen was mad that he used woman as an insult. And then I was mad about that too. And it was like, I need to sort through these feelings, because I like redlined internally, and I'm like, that's interesting. You know what I mean? Otherwise, you just move on, and that's in you. Like, you haven't dealt with it. You haven't, like, and that's going to come out somewhere else. It's like you take a beach ball and you hold it underwater. You're like, it's just going to stay down here. It's going to pop out somewhere. And so why not sort it out? So then how do you feel about those experiences? And then often, just generally a review of your day. 2 Corinthians 13:5 says, examine yourself to see whether you're in the faith. Test yourself. And often we think about tests like, I'm going to pass or I'm going to fail. It isn't like that. A test, and it's like, what it's designed for is just to show you where you're at. And so the idea of this is like, where are you at each day? What's going on in your own kind of process? And this practice through my sabbatical is how I figured out what God was doing in me throughout the course of my entire sabbatical, which shaped me and my own family moving forward. Jen lost her journal at the end of our sabbatical, and it was like devastating because it was a collection of all that God had done, right? And so The study leave, this process is what helped me be able to move forward. Then the last thing I'll put on here is you actually have to come back and review the stuff, which I'm going to get into more in the weeks ahead of what you would do with this stuff, because the thing's building on itself. But like in the past, last year, I would just lay the whole thing out and move on and be like, so go and do likewise. Now I'm trying to take you through a process of actually practicing and doing the stuff together. Because practice is what we're talking about. I'm not assuming, but we're actually learning how to do this stuff together. And so why don't you open the journal, if you haven't yet. Some of you have been taking notes. I like it. I would highly recommend putting the first page on your journal, writing like your name, and if someone were to find this, which like your cell phone or something, because you'd want to get that back. Maybe like I would give you $20 if you give me this. Like whatever, my goodwill. Help me, give it back. So something, I keep a table of contents at the front of my journal on purpose, and I number the pages, because by the time I'm through 6 months and 300 pages in a journal, I don't know what's back there. And you know how frustrating it is to be like, I remember at some point I thought something and there's a thing, I don't know. But if you have a table of contents and each time you break into a new thing and you just flip back and you write, observations from church on Presence Week 2, page 1 or whatever. Like you'll be able to find the stuff. Because the whole point of this is a journal is a place in a tool. Like if words create worlds, it's the process of reflection through this thing. It's actually a tool in your own reflection and transformational process of becoming like Jesus. And so you want to have access to it. And you want to be intentional with it. So I would do that. And then I would number it, and then I would name this thing right now, Presence Week 2 Journaling Meditation. Write that in there. And now I'm going to encourage you to just take three or four deep breaths. Like we did last week, I'm going to let you do it on your own this time. Spirit, we just ask you to speak and to move to us as your community and as your people. Pray that you open up our hearts and your presence. And I'm actually going to put up the same questions that we put up last week. But this time I want to encourage you to actually write down some of your thoughts and responses to those questions, not just think about them. So it's a very similar process, but it's actually taking it one step further towards doing something in your life. So would you put up the next slide? So consider the last 7 days. Don't interpret the thoughts that come. Don't justify, don't rationalize. Just observe and remember what's there. And remember, you can't get there. Often I want to race through this and be like, what's the last question? I did it. You're already there. So just slow down and be present to even this. First question, when did you feel most anxious and when did you feel most alive in the last 7 days? Second question, where were you cooperating most fully with God's actions in your life this week, and where were you resisting? Next question. What habits and life patterns do you notice from the last 7 days? Next question. When was your greatest sense of belonging, and when did you feel most alone in the last 7 days? Next question. When did you give and receive love in the last 7 days? Now, those five questions are meant to take you deep, and the next several are meant to guide you out. And so, Spirit, we ask that you would guide us. Next question. What do you need to release in order to move on this week? Or where do you need to seek forgiveness or forgive? Next question. Where do you need to ask for direction or share concerns? Where do you need to express gratitude? Last question. How do you want to live your life differently tomorrow? Now, as we're talking about presence and being present, and this invitation of Jesus to enter into his kingdom and become like him, these are tools of contemplative prayer that have been used for a very, very long time in the life of the church, throughout the whole history of the life of the church of God's people. Breathing, praying, waiting on the Spirit of God, accessing, examine. The prayer of examine that we're using is from Ignatius. It's very old. It's a powerful tool, journaling and capturing what God is doing and taking every thought captive. These are amazing tools that aren't just for a Sunday experience, but are actually for us. My hope is that you would take this with you, and this could be a practice that you would incorporate into your life. And as you take those things, as you're present to yourself, obviously in the presence of God, we're shifting from this point this month. And we're moving towards a whole different aspect of what it means to be present moving forward. Is how do we take all that and then bring it into the presence of God and learn how to enter in with our full selves, which is where this thing is going to go next. So we're not going to do these same questions again. So you can take them with you, but my hope wasn't just that we'd have experiences on Sunday, but that you'd actually be learning tools that you could take with you that would become a part of your like shaping of who you are. So that's yours. That's for you to have. I want to encourage you guys, would you stand with us? We're going to take that awareness of God's presence in our midst, in our soul, in our heart, in our mind, and bring it into the midst of our community. And I encourage you just to sing and to worship with us as we come to the end of our time together in a place of response.